Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Welcome in to the RotoWire NFL podcast. This is the pre-combine edition, one of my favorite episodes that we do every year with the combine testing about 24 hours away from getting started here. Thursday afternoon, the tight ends, the quarterbacks, and the wide receivers will be on the field in Indianapolis getting things started for us. Everyone is weighed in at this point, except maybe the defensive backs. I think they weigh in tomorrow, but we got the heights and weights for all the receivers, all the quarterbacks, all the running backs, all that good stuff, offensive linemen too. The running backs will be testing on Friday. But Mario, we're going to get into some of the notable absences from this year's combine, guys that will not be testing in Indianapolis, waiting till their pro days for varying different reasons. We're also going to get into some interesting position switch requests that were handed out by the NFL. They, of course, have to be accepted by their respective player before they can actually go through officially. And then we're going to get into some expectations for the big name guys in this year's combine, as well as some under the radar guys that we think are going to do well, guys with the most to prove. And then we're also going to get into some prop bets to wrap up today's show. So Mario, starting things off, what was your impression of J.K. Dobbins announcing this morning that the high ankle sprain suffered sometime late in the season is probably going to keep him out of testing this week?
That's interesting. I don't know if I quite believe it. That game was... When was that?
December 27th, 28th?
Yeah, that's not a two-month injury. That's a one-month injury. So either he aggravated it somehow or he developed it outside of that game, and that he's saying that it was in that game makes me kind of just not believe any of it. But it is interesting. He showed up lighter than expected. I think he was listed at 217 or 219 or something like that. Showed up at 209. I want to say at 5'11", which is not really that good. Like, if I was assuming he's a 5'11", 209 guy, then I'm probably not ranking him as high as I have to this point. Like, I was assuming he was going to come in just a little bit under 220, because if he's, let's say he runs like a 4.54 40-yard dash at 220 pounds, that's the kind of thing where it's like, I'm not exactly excited about the speed, but the fact that he's over 220 makes me look at it, the bigger picture, and say like, well, this is a pretty big running back. He doesn't need to be the fastest. If you're 209, and especially at like 5'11", like 209, it's another thing. If you're like 5'8", 5'9", that's a pretty dense build. 5'11", 209 is not dense at all. It would be interesting if the ankle thing is true, and maybe his training, especially kind of like squats and stuff like that, were compromised. That might explain how he perhaps even lost some weight. But yeah, right now I don't know what his real weight effectively is, and we're also going to have to punt on the question of how fast he actually is if he doesn't work out. So I cannot consider this like a good development, and especially for I guess like dynasty and rookie drafts, I can't in good like faith, good conscience, recommend him over guys like Swift and maybe even Edwards-Helaire, Zach Moss, by the time this is over, depending on how those guys test.
One quick thing. I think he's closer to 5'9 than 5'11. Oh, so
5'9, 209. Yeah, that is pretty decently dense then. My bad on that one. But yeah, still about 10 pounds less than he was supposed to be. So
right.
Maybe the ankle had something to do with that. And if so, that would be reassuring knowledge, even though we would in that case know he's also hurt right now.
But yeah, but I think to your larger point there, I think that at this stage, with him probably not testing at the combine, you have to generously, or at best, put him third at the running back, among the running backs, behind Taylor and Swift, unless either of those guys tank their respective combines. I'm not expecting either of them to, especially not Taylor, but I have a little bit of concerns with some of Swift's testing, but we'll see. I think the agility stuff he's going to crush, but I wonder what like the jumps are going to look like, and I wonder if that 40, I think that the prop for him is like 4.47. If he goes under 4.5, then I think that would be a positive for Swift, but we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. And Swift's one of those guys, it's like he's shown enough on tape that we know he's good at football stuff. The question is like what kind of star potential he has. And that's where the combine kind of helps us, you know, really split hairs, because Jonathan Taylor is going to run very well. I was not to go too far off topic into an unscheduled Jonathan Taylor segment, but I was just watching a bunch of players I was watching tape of yesterday. And I had not looked at Taylor in months, because it was just, I look at his numbers, I look at the reported workout numbers, it's an easy evaluation. He's running back one, it's not really all that close to me. When I watched the tape yesterday, it was like, oh my God, I forgot how good this guy is. Mm-hmm. It's insane how good he is. And there's a bunch of plays, not just one or two, like there's a bunch where I have to believe he has 4.3 speed. Like, I think granted, he might have been like 217 or something in some of that Wisconsin tape, and he weighed in a bit heavier than I was expecting at 5'10", 226, which if he runs like a 4.42 at that weight, that's awesome, but I think
he's going to run faster.
Yeah. I think in his tape, there's a lot of times where I'm like, I don't want to say anything that sounds especially stupid, you know, 2 days from now, but he looks closer to like a 4.3 flat guy than he does a 4.45 guy. And looks aren't much, and he might be heavier now than he was during that tape, but God, he's insane.
Yeah, absolutely. So excited to watch him this weekend, of course. Let's get on to some other notables that aren't working out. You and I talked about this a little bit off air this morning, but it looks like Tyler Johnson, he won't be working out. And then Bryan Edwards was injured. He's not going to be able to work out either, but Tyler Johnson opting not to.
Right. It's a bummer, especially in Edwards' case. I don't know if he's going to be able to run at all before the draft. So I can't see him getting into the second round with that being the case. But on the other hand, with Edwards, you watch him on tape and you know see that he was a good player at South Carolina, and you realize that without thinking at any point that he's fast or anything. Like,
right.
You know that he's not fast. So if he doesn't prove that he's fast, then it doesn't really necessarily change that much of his evaluation from the NFL. But the thing is, this is a deep receiver class, and there's other guys who will run and will probably do well with that. And if you've got you know, two out of three grades with good variables, and then the third is an incomplete, you're going to lose almost by default to the guy who has three good ones, even if it's not
exactly
fair. So in Tyler Johnson's case, I have to think that this means that he knows he's not going to run in the 4-5 range. I think if he knew that he was going to run in the 4-5 range, he would just run at the combine. So I think he's going to, you know, you get a bit of a faster track at the pro day settings. Usually the combine is either a neutral or even borderline slow track compared to some of these rubber tracks that they run on at these campuses. So it's a good way for Tyler Johnson to just subtract up to a tenth of a second from his 40 time. I don't know if it'll really have any effect on the narrative surrounding him, especially within the NFL. Like, I think they already have an idea of how fast he is, and they're not going to be fooled by the pro day setting.
Sure.
Changing the number. They're just going to kind of adjust for the inflation or whatever on their own. But yeah, I'm guessing he's going to end up with Tyler Johnson will end up with an athletic profile similar to guys like Tyler Boyd and Rashard Higgins, where they put up big numbers in college. They're not exactly heavy. In fact, they're more so skinny than you would say heavy. But they're so productive in college that you have reason to believe that they have real skills to work with. And especially in the slot where you don't need the speed to separate as much. I think Tyler Johnson will do just fine there. Like I really am kind of settling on a Tyler Boyd comparison for him.
I like that. Yeah, that's definitely solid. I could see that type of trajectory. Obviously disappointing that he won't be working out, but you know, we weren't expecting him to you know, blow up the combine necessarily either. Let's get into some of the guys who were asked by the league to do some workouts at different positions there. I think the obvious one starting things out was Chase Claypool. You know, he weighs in and just kind of like blows everyone away on Monday with checking in at like 6'4", 238, playing wide receiver. So, of course, he's going to get a look at tight end drills. He, by all accounts, was a good special teams player at Notre Dame. I think he's physical enough, but you have to wonder how smooth that transition would be. I looked up some other physical comparisons and on Pro Football Reference, and outside of, like, you know, you can't compare him to Calvin Johnson, of course, but you get to like the Ernest Wilfords of the worlds, the Ernest Wilford zone, as I called it to Waylon this morning. But what did you make of Claypool, and do you think that he's more receiver than tight end, or do you think that this is potentially a good career path for him?
I think it could be both that he's capable of playing receiver and yet he could also be a productive tight end for some team. And with some of these classifications, it's really trivial semantics that we're fussing over. It's like, consider that, you know, we call Travis Kelce a tight end, and he is a tight end, of course. But if he played every single snap that he ever plays at wide receiver, it wouldn't look that much different than what he does anyway, and no one would really change the title or anything. It's like you get sometimes these big slot positions, especially, you get tight ends running there a lot. It's just a little bit more of a positionless era that we're heading into. And Claypool, I'm guessing only from the tape. I don't know his workout numbers off the top of my head, but he looks athletic enough.
Yeah, he's springy.
Yeah, he looks athletic enough to be a wide receiver. Like when he catches the ball, turns to run, it looks like a wide receiver doing it.
It's not bad weight that he has. Like, he's rocked up.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of funny. I didn't mean to, like, as if, not that I have any delusions that I had like some effect on this, but I tweeted out after that weigh-in, like, you know, that's basically the same frame as some of these tight ends, like Harrison Bryant from Florida Atlantic and Brayson Hopkins from Purdue. And it's kind of funny, because it's like, if those guys could test anywhere near the level that we suspect Claypool to test, they would be getting hype as like first round picks or something. Mm-hmm. Because he's the same weight as them, and like, just because they have a TE next to their name doesn't make up for the fact that, you know, they're much less athletic than he is. So I meant that more as like a concerning thing for those tight ends, though, because it's like, as much as Harrison Bryant is a decent looking player, has great numbers, it's like, if you're 240 pounds and you're playing an NFL tight end, you have got to be fast now. Like, you can't be a 4.7 guy at 240 pounds. Your game is not going to translate. But Claypool, he could be that 6'4", 240 or whatever, but then also have the necessary exceptional athleticism to make it work, even though he's, you know, 25 pounds lighter than maybe the average starting inline tight end. So it's interesting. I don't think he needs to convince anyone that he's a tight end if he tests at a certain threshold for receiver. But you know, if he does, if he's got the same frame as some of these guys who are listed at tight end, and he's got to be able to do some of the same stuff as them. It's just, you know, he's going to be way faster and going to be able to jump a lot higher than them.
Yeah, exactly. So he's definitely one of the more interesting guys heading into this week's testing. Interested to see how his draft stock ends up playing out, and, you know, whether they deem him fully a tight end after this week, or, you know, just keep him as like a big receiver type of prospect for a second. Like, there
an Evan Engram kind of case, sure, or something. He was way faster than I expected, and then they still kept him at tight end.
For a second there I was wondering, because, you know, Mark Andrews isn't like lauded for his, you know, classic tight end abilities, like the blocking and everything. But I looked it up. Mark Andrews is 256. So, like, he's, you know, a good bit bigger. He was recruited as a receiver, though, coming out of high school.
Claypool, it's like he might just kind of play both positions. And if he can play in line, it's great. But I don't think he needs to convince anyone that he's a tight end. I think he projects fine as a receiver, too, if that falls through.
Okay. And if he... I'm not saying, again, just because of the Notre Dame thing, but if he can test above expectation the way that like a Miles Boykin did, where do you think his stock ends up? Could he be a day two guy when this week's all said and done?
Yeah, I think he's in that round three general range for me to begin with. I mean, if he gets anywhere near Boykin kind of number, and he can't because he's a lot heavier than Boykin, but if he did like the relative equivalent of what Boykin did, guys that big who are that athletic just don't happen very much. And if he convinces teams that he can contribute snaps at two different positions, I could see him pushing for like the first 40 picks or something like that. I don't feel compelled to specifically expect that outcome, but unexpected things happen every single combine. If Claypool is let's see, if he's 6'4", 238, and he runs like a 4.47 or something like that, that would be the kind of thing that could actually shake up the wide receiver rankings at the top of the draft.
Yeah, that would be really beastly, and definitely not writing off that possibility. Really athletic guy from the film there. So if he does that at that height and weight, that would be wild. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Some guys who might have been losers from the weigh-ins this week. I want to start with two of the smaller receivers in this class, one of which projected to be a day two pick by most, I think, but we'll see how that turns out in KJ Hamler. And then unfortunately it feels like the Jeff Thomas hive might need to go away.
Yeah, Jeff Thomas coming in at 5'9 170 was kind of strange, and he could still stay involved as a day three kind of prospect, but when you're 5'9 170, you need to be probably like 4.38 or better in the 40 just to stay draftable, or even arguably draftable. But, yeah, 5'9", 170 is bad, because Hamler at 5'9", 178 is bad, too. And eight more pounds off on the same frame, it's a pretty big gap between the two, actually. It's like you look at Hamler and think, he's tiny. It's like Thomas is quite a bit smaller yet, even though Hamler, you would think, it doesn't get any smaller than this. So if it gets smaller than that, you have to be extremely fast as like a mandatory starting point. It's not if Thomas runs like a 4.4 flat, I'm just gonna ignore him.
Yeah, that's just how that's gonna be. But when it comes to Hamler, I looked at, you know, some other physical comparisons. Do you think like an Andrew Hawkins type of trajectory could be possible for him?
Hawkins was a little smaller yet, but it's kind of I think it's like an Andy Isabella kind of case, especially because Hamler is predicting that he'll run a high 4.2. He thinks he's going to run like a 4.28 or something like that, which I think he's going to run like a 4.33, trivial distinction. But he's got that rare speed, so he's got that going for him, and it helps to be productive. He's still an underclassman. For all we know, if he had stayed another year at Penn State, he would have gone into next year's combine at 5.9, 187 or something like that.
Okay. So
age is worth keeping in mind, because the younger they are, the more likely they'll have room to build on their frames. But yeah, it's a... when you're that light, as Hamler is, as much as his situation is much better than Thomas's, it's still a pretty precarious spot for Hamler. It's like, if you're that small, you do not have the luxury of missing a little bit, even in your testing. Like, you need to be one of the five fastest guys, or else you're just the smallest guy. And you know, being like the 10th fastest at the smallest frame does not mean much in itself.
All right, let's shift our gears over with a more positive light. Let's look at some of the guys who won their respective weigh-ins in your mind.
Yeah, so I guess I got to start with a weird trio of cases, and I guess this means that somebody was weighing wrong at the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine game, because Levante Bellamy was listed at 5'9", 172 by the East-West Shrine game, which was, whatever, 2 months ago, something like that, a month and 6 weeks, something like that. And that's 20 pounds in 6 weeks, which I just don't think is really possible.
No.
I don't think it's possible.
Doing the Cartman weight gain routine after.
Yeah, the weight gain 4,000 does not get you that level of return. It's like you need 8 weeks if you want to clear 20 pounds. So something was wrong. Somebody had a typo in the East-West Shrine game, which I still don't think Bellamy is going to be good. But a 4.3 at 192 is a lot different than a 4.3 at 172. And that kind of speed at 192 will keep you on the radar for the NFL. With that said, he's just a worse version of Nyheim Hines to me, so I still don't really care about Bellamy. The other one was Eno Benjamin, who was listed at 5'9", 195 at the
Senior Bowl.
Why was he at the Senior Bowl? Is that because he graduated early or something?
Yeah.
Narks. Okay, so 5'9", 195 at the Senior Bowl. He comes in at a much better weight, 5'9", 207, 12 pounds difference in, again, about a month. It's at once good in a vacuum that he's 5'9", 207 instead of 5'9", 195. On the other hand, I don't know if you can add weight that fast without paying some kind of price. And he never looked fast to me on the tape. If he's 195 on the tape and now he's going to run a 40 at 207 with 12 pounds that he added in about a month, I could imagine that going quite badly. But we'll see. If he runs well at that 207, then I'm going to have to adjust my line on him quite a bit, because I've been assuming he's 195 and slow. 207 and slow is still much better than 195 and slow. And then the other one is Keyshawn Vaughn, who was listed at 205 at the Senior Bowl, came in at 214. So All three of those guys, it remains to be seen if it was like problematic weight that they added and if they were able to add the weight and still train properly for their testing. But if they test okay on weights like that, that's a lot different than what they would have been based on their bowl season or all-star game weigh-ins or whatever.
Okay. So, I mean, things looking up for those guys. Yeah, I, as someone who identified Vaughn as a potential sleeper going into this process, good to see there. Do you have any interest whatsoever in some of like the heavier guys, not A.J. Dillon level, but guys like maybe a Tony Jones out of Notre Dame for 5'10", 220?
He's not really on my radar, but he is in that like endless group of running back prospects where it's like, whatever, I don't care if they can do basic. If they meet basic athletic requirements,
the Perrine zone,
if they're on an NFL team, it's like, sure, pretty much any of them can probably do something. There's a few interesting weights that came through additional than the three that we started with. Zach Moss and Mike Warren were both 5'9", which they don't look that short to me on the tape. I'm almost wondering if there's something weird going on this year. But those guys are super dense, because Mike Warren's 226 on a 5'9" frame, Moss 223. Another dense guy, a guy who was much denser than I expected, was Anthony McFarland at 5'8", 208. That kind of reminds me of Daryl Henderson getting over 205 for the combine and running a little slower than I expected. So it wouldn't be shocking to me if at that weight, McFarland runs like a 4.49, but he looks on tape more like a 4.35, 4.38 kind of guy. And if he can run like that at 208, he could push for the top 50 picks, I think. And he's not really getting he's not getting hype of that scale from the internet that I look at, so he might surprise some people with his stock coming out of here. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I know some people are gonna say like 5'7", that's bad. No, 5'7", 207 is good. That just shows, you know, that density, it's good, and when you can catch passes like him, that will definitely work. So yeah, there's a few interesting guys at running back. I guess those are the only ones.
How about McFarland's teammate Javon Leak?
Yeah,
6'215.
6'215 is still a little thin for 6 feet, but it could have been worse. And either way, if he's 215 and runs like a 4.38 or something like that, that'll definitely work, because he's not supposed to be a 20 carry guy anyway. You're hoping he can give you 8 carries a game for, you know, 40 plus yards each time, and, you know, some long breakaway carries sprinkled in, and that's all you need from him.
Okay. Any other ones you wanted to touch on before we talked a little bit more about some potential position switches?
Well, there's still some wide receiver weigh-ins that were interesting. Laviska Shenault, 6'1", 227. Pretty much just A.J. Brown is the only other receiver, him and like Chris Harper from Kansas State a long time ago. Those are the only guys who weigh in with that sort of density and on that frame, so that's pretty interesting. We will talk about one of the interesting weigh-ins for the position switch, I think. But otherwise, glancing at the rest of the receivers, Jerry Jeudy at 6'1", 193, and CeeDee Lamb.
A little underwhelming for both of them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if they test well enough with the athletic testing, it won't matter. But 6'2", 198 for Lamb, that I would have liked to see him be over 200, but 6'2", 198 is okay, basically. I'm a little bit more concerned about Jeudy because 6'1", 193, that's pretty skinny, and he at once could test at these thresholds that I have in mind. Like, he could run a 4.35, and then it's like, I don't care if you're skinny, you can do that, that's fine. Mecole Hardman can be 180 pounds because he runs a 4.33. If he ran a 4.43, it would just be like, oh, now you're just Paul Richardson or something. But in any case, Jerry Jeudy at 193 has a very thin margin of error. And with Jalen Reagor notably coming in at 5'11", 206, which is 11 pounds heavier than expected, if Reagor is almost 15 pounds heavier and then running a faster 40, mm-hmm. I think Reagor could be the first receiver off the board. I'm still sticking with Lamb and Jeudy ahead of him for now, but you know, if Reagor runs a 4.29 at 207 or whatever, that's just ridiculous.
While that would be ridiculously impressive, and you know, I do, and you and I both expect Reagor to be, one of the combine darlings for sure. But don't you feel like there's enough other warts to his game where like the athletic testing would, there'd be an overreaction if he ends up being wide receiver one, basically? Like, I mean, not to draw like a direct comparison, I know it's different players to like a Breshad Perriman or something, but I don't know, man. Like there are enough problems in Rager's game where I wouldn't take him above Lamb or Jeudy. I'd be fine with ranking him third, but I would be shocked if he goes first.
That's fair. If these testing outcomes are the way that I'm describing for the hypothetical, I think him going first would be really plausible, though, because if he's 15 pounds heavier than Jerry Jeudy and he runs faster by like 0.06 0.06 in the 40, I don't have enough concerns with Jalen Reagor's production or tape. Like I like his tape in production quite a bit. It's like Jeudy and Lamb get the benefit of the doubt going into the combine because their production is basically off the charts. But I just can't convince myself that if Reagor had been on Alabama or Oklahoma that he couldn't have done something similarly.
Okay.
And it gets harder to convince yourself, or it gets harder for me to convince myself that he's a level below them if he's going to have basically a much lower difficulty level as an NFL player because he's just a better athlete than the two of them. We'll see. Because, and again, this could all be moot because for all I know, CeeDee Lamb could run a 4.46 or Jerry Jeudy could run a 4.35. And then it's like, yeah, even if you're skinny, I don't care if you're that fast. But if they disappoint in the 40 and if Reagor has his best case outcome in his testing, I really think he could be the first receiver off the board. But for now, I definitely consider it a long shot because we don't have a reason to believe it'll be the worst case for both Lamb and Jeudy and the best case for Reagor.
Right, yeah. And I don't mean to paint myself as a Reagor hater by any means. I wanted to, you know, just acknowledge that I would be surprised if he ends up being receiver one.
It's an unlikely outcome. It takes more than a few conditions for us to get to that point.
Okay. Let's move on over. I mean, we can kind of jump in a little bit more into some of these receivers because we just talked about Jeudy and Lamb and Reagor and Shenault having the interesting way in looking like A.J. Brown a little bit. Let's get into Henry Ruggs. I feel like he is kind of the headliner of this combine almost with some rumors that he's going to break the John Ross 4.22. Whether that's possible, I don't know. But, I mean, the guy really...
Getting into, like, theoretical...
Yeah, whether Ruggs is actually able to pull that off or whether that's even physically possible to begin with remains to be seen.
Yeah, he knew it was a 4.22 when he was talking to NFL Network or something, probably yesterday. He knew it was 4.22, and he said specifically that he intends to break it. So it's one of those things. You turn on the tape, he basically looks like the fastest player that I've ever seen, as far as I know. It's like you can't isolate and put and control all the variables of how fast every fast guy has looked on the football field, but he looks as fast as anybody. And as much as the 40 time in Tyreek Hill's case was not the best, I think we can call him the fastest player. It's like one of those things. If he had John Ross's track background, maybe he would have been a little better in his 40 or something. But after Hill, I really think I take the on-field speed of Ruggs even ahead of Ross. So a 4-2-1, it's like on some objective level, it feels unlikely or even impossible, but not based on how fast he actually looks on the field.
Yeah, he just plays at a different speed than everybody else, just kind of ridiculous. So I'm expecting the combine to shore that up. The prop that I've seen is either Rager or Ruggs being the fastest in the 40, with Ruggs being the favorite. And I think there's a cornerback, I don't want to say the wrong name, but out of Utah, that is also rumored to be around Ruggs' level.
Who is that?
Again, I don't know the name off the top of my head.
I guess I got to look that guy up. But yeah, I think Rager will be very fast, but he's going to be running at about 20 pounds heavier than Ruggs. So I think Ruggs beats him pretty easily, actually. It'll be interesting to watch. It's also interesting that I'm pretty sure Henry Ruggs weighed in and measured at the exact same height weight as John Ross at 5'11", 188. So we have a perfectly analogous testing scenario for the speed of the two players.
Javelin Guidry is the
is the
Utah guy.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. I saw that name floating around and I thought people were talking about that Mississippi State receiver or whatever.
Stephen Guidry, yeah.
Yeah, is he fast too?
I think he's going to play himself out of getting drafted at the combine.
Okay. Well, in any case, some of the fastest guys of recent memory all running at once. If Rager runs like a 4.35 or better at 207 or whatever, or 206, that would still be an insane outcome. So I'm not expecting him to close in on a guy who realistically could run a 4.22 like Ruggs will.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And that, again, I think they test the receivers due on Thursday. So
yeah, the running backs are on Friday. So yeah, if you're doing best ball drafts on best ball 10s, or I guess FFPC might have some, I don't know. But I fully expect Jonathan Taylor to be in the top 30, certainly, in the ADP. I think he'll run like a 4.4 flat at 226, something like that. And this silly idea that Swift and Dobbins are particularly close to him, I think, will finally die.
Sure.
And those two will slide in the ADP. Taylor will rise. And I think we'll see Rager and T. Higgins go higher, too. Like, T. Higgins, do you want to go into the prop discussion now?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, yeah, because there was one on T. Higgins that was kind of interesting to me. What is the name of this? I don't know how to read these. Sportsbetting.ag.
Yeah, sportsbet.ag. And they have a list out there of combine props. Those are always fun. So stuff like it, you know, will John Ross's 40 record be broken? Will Chris Conley's vertical record be broken? That sort of thing. And they have some individual player ones, of course, as well. So let's get into those. Like you were saying there, with T. Higgins, his checks in at 4.57 seconds.
Yeah, so 4.57 for Higgins would be okay. Like, I think he could go in the first round with that number, but after watching some tape of his yesterday, I'm optimistic that he can actually push for the low 4.5s. And it's kind of risky to just guess how fast a guy is based on tape, but there were a few times in his tape where I thought he started to cut loose a little bit more, and he looked pretty fast to me. So I would take the under on that. I think I'm expecting him to be more like a 4.51 kind of thing, and maybe even in the mid 4.4s, which would put him in the top 20 for me.
Wait, I mean, that speed on that frame would just be incredible. You know, we're talking about a guy who's 6'3", 216, 6'3".
6'4", I think he came in at.
Okay, and then
for Higgins.
Okay, and the arms, like an offensive lineman would be envious of, like a 34-inch arm, too.
Yeah, that's a big... I think... it's like Hakeem Butler was a 35 or whatever last year, and people were freaking out. With Higgins, you've got actual skill in the same sort of selling point. Like, he's got the wingspan, the catch radius. These other guys ranked at the top of the wide receiver order don't have anywhere near his frame. So if some team is specifically of a mind to get a bigger receiver. He could benefit from some scarcity inflation. I don't know if that's being properly grappled with right now. There seems to be this assumption that just Lamb, Judy can't really be caught. But I think Higgins and Rager, depending on how they test, and if the first two disappoint at all, there might be a way for those second two guys to catch up. Speaking of Lamb, I actually found this kind of concerning, the betting market that they show for his 40 time. A 4.54 second 40, and then the payout rate is the same for both the over and the under. These other cases, you kind of have an idea of which way it's going to go based on the payouts getting worse. This is equal for those two outcomes, which makes me think he really is going to run like a 4.52. And I'd like to have Lamb a little lower than that, at least to hold off the competitors who are as strong as they are in this class. Ruggs, Judy, Higgins, Rager. It's like you need to perform well in your 40 time to hold off a crew like that. And I'm kind of losing the faith after seeing that 4.54 and then the identical payouts.
Yeah, that number is really, really, really dialed in when you look at the payouts on both sides there. Another guy, someone who I think could struggle at this combine, and I think that we see kind of telling in terms of the betting market there, Justin Jefferson checking in with a 4.51 as his over-under in the 40, and it's minus 500 for slower than 4.51 and plus 300 if he goes faster than that. So that seems to suggest that we're looking at not just over 4.51, but like by a decent margin.
Yeah, I don't know if this site makes their payout numbers based on how the money is coming in or if they make their own projections ahead of time and try to pursue a certain ratio of one bet to another and fix it that way with the rates. But if there already has been a bunch of money coming in for Jefferson and the over 4.51, I think that would make a lot of sense because I'm pretty sure he's not that fast. I could be wrong. I'm constantly wrong about trying to guess about how fast some guy is based on the tape, but 4.51 for Justin Jefferson sounds like the absolute best case scenario to me. So for him to do better than that, I just can't really take it seriously as a possibility.
Yeah, I would be really, really surprised if he ran faster than 4.51.
He also came in at over 200 pounds after being listed at 192. So if he added that weight quickly, that's the kind of thing that can drag a guy down a bit.
Sure. And then circling back on Higgins real quick, I like thought I was losing my mind, but no, he's 6'3 and 5'8.
They'll round up hairs. if it's a half or more, they'll round up.
Sure, so. Sure.
But congratulations on your enduring sanity, John.
Okay, yeah, I needed that. I was tilting there for a second. Anything else on Jefferson? I mean, because again, he's someone that we've probably seen, through in the industry get tossed into the late first round in some mocks. We've had the sniff out on that not probably being the case here for him. But like, what's like the best case scenario for him here?
He's kind of in the same category now for me as Tyler Johnson. Like, he's got a similar frame, and he's in theory more of a slot guy because you're not expecting him to outrun people. I think it's good that Jefferson came in over 200 pounds. He was a little shorter than expected. Like, I think he was a high 6'1 or a low 6'2. Some people might see that as a negative. I don't really care. I mean, the density is more important to me than the height or the weight in a vacuum. So being over 200 pounds is good, because if he was a low 190 and slow, that would project pretty poorly. But if he's over 200 and he's kind of slow, you can maybe fix that, because you go back to, again, the Tyler Boyd case. He ran a 4.58, to be fair. He wasn't like a total slug, but that was still not the kind of numbers you would have guessed from a guy who was as productive as he was. And Justin Jefferson's certainly got an insane production in his favor. I just don't think that the athletic testing will be that friendly to him.
No, I really don't either. Let's move on to some under-the-radar guys that we think are going to turn some heads this week.
Yeah, so one of those guys that was listed in the suggested positional changes was Joe Reed, the guy that you had the sent out for last week, the wide receiver from Virginia. And he came in at 6'1", 224. That sounds a lot more like a running back than a receiver. So it wasn't shocking to see he was named as one of the guys that they were giving a look at running back. It'll be interesting. I guess I'm not specifically expecting any particular thing with him, but when you put up the kind of kick return numbers that he did, you wouldn't be shocked to see a good 40 time from him. But otherwise, In terms of the, I guess, the overall good workouts, I'm expecting A.J. Dillon to make good on his 4.47 prediction. And this is important. He came in at 6'2", 247. That's the same weight as Derrick Henry at 3 inches shorter. And he might. So if Derrick Henry ran a 4.54 at 248, and we've seen the results of the effect of that kind of size adjusted speed, if A.J. Dillon is even shorter than him, but the same weight and then faster, that's just so much trauma on a defense. I don't know how someone can look at him if he tests that way. Like if he runs a 4.65, then I'm going to be like, never mind. I don't know who that is. But if he runs a 4.47 at 248 and people still talk about him as like a fifth round pick or a fullback, I'm just going to lose my mind.
Sure. So what in your mind is the threshold there? Would it be Derrick Henry's 4.54?
So because he has even better density, I think something up to like a 4.56, 4.58 would basically make him the same size adjusted speed variable as Henry. So if he runs a 4.47, he's just straight up a even more freakish athlete than Derrick Henry. That's not to say he's going to be as good of a running back, because Henry is a skilled running back in addition to a...
He's like the greatest high school running back in the state of Florida's history type of deal, and Heisman Trophy runner.
That's child abuse for everybody else who had to tackle him. That's just unreasonable. But yeah, A.J. Dillon, again, it's a similar thing. I mean, he was that size as a true freshman, yep, too. I think he's going to be ready for the track environment. I think he's clearly a guy who knows how to do this sort of testing. I don't think entitled to a 4.5 or better from A.J. Dillon. And if he runs that, the days of getting him in the 20th round of best ball drafts will be over. He will be, I think, in the third round as a consensus projection at that point. And it's just kind of silly. If that happens, if it all plays out that way, it's silly that we spent so much time talking about him as a day three, you know, sixth, fifth round pick, a fullback tweener, when all those workout numbers were available this whole time. Like he told us 4.47, 40 plus inch vertical. If he does that, then there is no objective way to say that, you know, he can't do most things that Henry does.
Does he vault to like over Zach Moss in your mind as like the top of that next tier of running backs?
I don't think so, because with Dillon, you know, as with Henry, we have to assume he's not going to do much as a pass catcher.
Right.
We can't rule it out, but we have to give this quite long list of other running backs the benefit of the doubt over him. And Zach Moss had awesome pass catching numbers at Utah, which it is important. And at 5'9", 223, he's really dense. If he can catch passes and test adequately, it's going to be tough to catch a player like Moss, because I'm going to rank Moss really high in that case. I'm very high on him. I can't tell if I'm too high, but it is safe to say that I'm higher on Moss than most people. But also, I'm higher on Dillon than most people. So if I could answer somehow, I'd kind of want to just take both.
Okay, yeah, I think both of those guys, things are looking good, especially if the combine ends up bearing that out. Let's go to your next guy under the radar that you think could make some noise.
Yeah, under the radar,
I got one potentially. I mean, this one kind of a long shot. There's so many receivers along this invite list, I think there were like 55 or something like that.
Two Rhode Island guys, I think.
Yeah, so interested to see what those guys do. I really have no expectation one way or the other for them. A little bit interested to see what Tony Brown out of Colorado can do. He was kind of regarded as a burner for them. 9 yards a target this past year in 2019. No like crazy explosiveness in his numbers, but I think just the sort of noise coming out of Colorado that he was their speed guy, their downfield guy, it's at least enough to make me, like, you know, have a second look at him and you know, keep an eye out for what he does in the combine. And then Cody White out of Michigan State, big receiver, 6'3", 217, 10-inch hands. If he can test reasonably well, maybe he finds himself as like a fifth or sixth round flyer.
Yeah, I'll have to look at Tony Jones. I didn't...
Tony Brown.
Oh, sorry, Tony Brown and Tony Jones, the Notre Dame running back. I got to know more about both of them.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
But yeah, I really like that these guys aren't out of nowhere or anything. In fact, they're kind of blue chips as far as this goes. But I really think Devin Duvernay is a reliable bet to do a 4.35 or better at about 200 pounds. So that'll keep him in the top 50 range for me if he does. Otherwise, I'm still not high on him as a receiver. In fact, I'm kind of skeptical of him and his skill set. But Donovan Peoples-Jones from Michigan will probably put some of the He will probably be like a top five sort of athlete at the position.
He was shorter than I thought he was. I mean, I feel like maybe he has like Paul Bunyan-esque sort of lore about it, like his Michigan days or like, you know, like his
jump.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing. And he's like 7 feet tall. It's like he's actually 6'1". You know, like
he's one of those guys who's just an insane athlete, and he could be a good player for it in the NFL. But it's like the production just never was there, and I don't see why we would think of him any differently than we would like a Tavian Feaster at running back. It's like it's all tools and pedigree and
Sewo the same way.
Sewo Lunanoa or whatever. Yeah, it's like it's one thing to say like, I wouldn't mind this guy in the seventh or sixth round, and it's another to say, like, oh, he's good as a receiver because he's a freak athlete. It's like, no, he's got the athletic tools, and the skill set is a question mark at best. But you're going to see people starting a lot of hype for him because his numbers are going to be great.
Yeah,
but you shouldn't count numbers twice like that, because the theory all along was that he would post numbers like that. You raise them in your rankings when something unexpected happens.
Yeah, I like the way you put that, like counting it twice, because no one came into this, hyping DPJ on what he did on the field at Michigan at all.
Right, and no one was saying like, oh, I think he's pretty good, I'm just worried about how he's going to test. It's like, no, it's an assumption this entire time, going back to when he was a recruit. The assumption was like, he will torch the workout setting. So if he torches the workout setting, you can't really give him credit again.
No, exactly. So
if Isaiah Hodgins torches the combine, that's when you go like, oh, crap, mm-hmm. I thought that guy was slow, and what do you know, he isn't. I still think Hodgins is slow, though.
I hope it works out. I kind of wonder, or like slightly interested in what Austin Mack does. Maybe he ends up being like Johnny Dixon from Ohio State last year, but I just figure I always assume that the Ohio State guys are going to crush the testing, and you know, Mac just not really being on anybody's radar at this point. He's probably like the third out of the three Ohio State receivers. Maybe it'll just be a workout and that's it, but I think that he will have eye-catching numbers this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. The Ohio State question is again a big part of the puzzle here. I don't know how to make the call, because some people are really hyping KJ Hill.
I will never.
I think it's out of an understandable anxiety about like missing the next Terry McLaurin, but I think it's a little misguided. I think he's more likely another Dixon. The McLaurin case was different for several reasons, mm-hmm. and KJ Hill. I mean, put it this way, I guess. No one's talking about Benjamin Victor or Austin Mack, really, but if KJ Hill is as good as they say he is, his proponents say he is, how are the other two not better than we hold them in, other than the regard we hold them in? If those guys are as bad as everybody is dismissing them as, how could KJ Hill possibly be good? Mm-hmm. He couldn't outproduce them hardly.
Right.
So Terry McLaurin posted insane numbers on a per target basis, and what he lacked in market share was basically the fault of Paris Campbell. There is no Paris Campbell in the Ohio State offense now. There is no Terry McLaurin in the Ohio State offense now. KJ Hill should have been able to post bigger numbers if that's true.
Yeah, he was losing stuff to Chris Olave, and I mean, all three of these guys were losing stuff to Olave and Garrett Wilson towards the end of the year.
Either Hill is worse than people are saying, or we are way too low on Victor and Mack.
Yeah, so one of those questions will be answered this weekend for sure.
Ooh, you know who really, going off topic real quick, but wanted to mention it before we leave. Hunter Bryant was one of the biggest winners of the weigh-in at 6'2", 248. He's 5 pounds heavier than Harrison Bryant at 3 inches shorter. Bryson Hopkins is 3 pounds lighter than Hunter Bryant. That was something that, you know, was not expected at all. So all of a sudden, Hunter Bryant is one of the denser tight ends in this, and if he can still run as fast as he looks on tape, maybe he won't. Maybe he runs like a 4.7 because he added, you know, 20 pounds of weight that he shouldn't have. But if he runs the way he looks on tape and he's 6'2", 248, I think that's a guy who could push for the first 40 picks.
Yeah, he's really, really athletic, and now that he's healthy, I think him having that healthy junior season was so important for him, because
he really runs.
He lit it up initially at Washington, then he got hurt, and it kind of drug into his sophomore year. Wasn't quite as good, but he was a beast. So hopefully if he tests well, like you said, I think he'll probably have the best athletic testing among the tight ends there. Any other tight ends that kind of caught your eye? I mean, Colby Parkinson, what do you do about a guy who's 6'7"?
His production fell off a cliff, yeah. And we saw Caleb What am I thinking of? Caleb Smith? Is that the Caden Smith? Mm-hmm. Caden Smith of Stanford. He went undrafted last year after running a 4.9 at the combine. Good rookie season for the Giants, but he was like a sixth or seventh round pick, and basically we have every reason to believe that Parkinson is worse than him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm pretty low on Parkinson to kind of answer that general question. But some guys that I thought weighed in well, in addition to Hunter Bryant, I would say Cole Kmet, who I'm still pretty low on, but 6'6", 262 is pretty huge. And he does
10.5 inch hands too.
Yeah, he doesn't need to run or jump that well to get a satisfactory athleticism grade at that weight. Albert Okwugabunam, or however it's pronounced, he was 6'5", 258. I think he was listed closer to 6'6" on one site, like 6'5.5", basically. Jared Pinkney, 6'4", 257. He's not tall, but that's a really good density level, and he had his best season at Vanderbilt was really quite good a couple of years ago, so I think he might have some talent. Adam Trautman at 6'5", 255. But yeah, somebody who didn't do as well, as in my opinion, is Bryson Hopkins at 6'4", 245. Like, he's one of the smallest tight ends. If you're lighter all of a sudden than Hunter Bryant, you had better test pretty well in your athletic testing, because you can't be the smallest and one of the slowest.
No, definitely not. So that was tough for him. Some receivers that I wanted to circle back on. John Hightower, coming into this, he was listed at like 172 or something at Boise
and
State.
6'3".
So now I think he has like a more NFL-looking type of measurement skill set. And I mean, he was a productive player at Boise State, explosive, had like 13 of his 51 catches this year, went for over 25 yards. So I think he has some deep threat ability, still on the skinny side at 6'1", 189, something like that. But
much better than 6'3", 185. Like,
yeah.
I kind of just ignored Hightower up to this point. I know he's got some fans, and like you said, his production is good. But yeah, I thought that even though he came in 2 inches shorter, I thought that was actually a win for
him. That definitely helped a lot. Juwan Johnson, I'll always be at least a little enamored with him, just for being a five-star guy. And he was good once he got healthy at Oregon this past year, but he might not be fast enough. Like he's about Claypool size, a little bit lighter, but I don't think he has the same burst and explosiveness.
Yeah, he's got that Adarius Bauman probably kind of problem. Like, I don't know if he's faster than a 4.7 or something like that. And if he is, I don't know how he didn't produce better, because he's always been a player with high expectations, and he looks intimidating when you glance at him, but then it just doesn't really show up in the numbers.
He had that one catch against Ohio State like 2 years ago that was really good.
yeah, he's totally good college player. It's just like he was supposed to, like, he was one of those guys 2 years ago that people were taking in the first five picks of Devy drafts.
Yep.
They were like, this guy's gonna be the next Megatron or something.
But really, he's the next DPJ.
Yeah, him and DPJ are you know, the combine, they're the workout warriors who just never really show up on the field. But not to write them both off, they still have a chance. It's just they're outliers if they do succeed in the NFL.
Okay, and one more guy I wanted to hit on, Juwan Jennings. Thoughts?
Yeah, that was a little, I thought just the way he looked on tape that he would be more like a 225 guy. 6'3", 215 is totally fine. I'm not concerned about it. But he's definitely one of those guys that I'm eagerly anticipating in the testing, because I think his production is better than it gets credit for. And the tape does nothing to worsen your, you know, evaluation.
The tape can almost make you overrate him, because he's such like a bull in a china shop. He had all those broken tackles. Like,
yeah,
I think like he had half as many broken tackles as he had catches. So basically once every two catches, he was breaking tackles this year.
Yeah, the entertainment factor with his tape is definitely way up. You know, it's like you watch Van Jefferson and you fall asleep or something. You watch Juwan Jennings and you're like, yeah, this guy is, I could take him first round, definitely. And, you know,
start like listening to Metallica.
Maybe he's not as good as his best points in the tape, but maybe he is. And if he runs like a 4.4 at 6'3", 215, we could all of a sudden have a very different narrative about him.
And two other guys I wrote down. Yeah, Stephen Guidry, we talked about for a second earlier. I think that it could go poorly for him. And I think Aaron Fuller also, it's going to go poorly for him out of Washington.
Yeah, I don't really believe in that. I almost think that Bacchelia guy was better than Fuller. And
bring back McClatcher.
Yeah, Chico McClatcher. Chico McClatcher defeats Henry Ruggs in famed combine battle. No, these alternate realities will not occur, sorry to say, although they're fun enough to think about. But yeah, I don't think that I don't know why. Fuller's one of those guys where it's like, I don't even know why you're really here. Patman, it seems like they were very generous with the number of receivers they invited this year.
Yeah, there are probably too many
guys. It's like, I don't care.
No,
Mooney.
No, yeah, Mooney like hit his way in did not go well. I'm interested to see what Lynn Bowden does, and I'm surprised that he didn't get, or at least on like, we're only working off that one report. Maybe he has since been invited to try things out at running back, but. I think it would work in his favor if he wanted to be a little bit more versatile, but I respect him if he just wants to try it out at receiver.
Yeah, I think he's a receiver. He's one of those guys you can imagine them, any offense having like multiple, like a Tony Pollard kind of case, basically, where you could imagine just thinking, just get him the ball somehow, just get him the ball wherever it is, who cares? Yeah, I think he's a really interesting player, and I'm higher on him than I am a guy like Brandon Ayuk, even though I have to rank Ayuk maybe a little earlier just because everybody else says that Ayuk is better and playing time projections do count. But I'm still optimistic that the NFL will like Lynn Bowden, and if he tests well, I'll be pretty much sure that they do.
One last guy that I wish was on this prop bets site. Cam Akers. I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Cam Akers for a second.
So he said today that he anticipates to run, quote, a 4.4. I don't know if that is to say the same thing as a 4.49 versus a 4.4 flat. I don't know if he had a 4.4 flat in mind when he said it. But yeah, I think anything under a 4.5 would be satisfactory for him. I don't know if there's much he can do to catch guys like certainly Zach Moss, but maybe not Edwards-Helaire. And I have A.J. Dillon ahead of Cam Akers going into this, too. So if Dillon does as well as I think, I don't anticipate Akers catching him, even if he does well. It's like Akers would have to do great and Dillon would have to disappoint for me to switch those two.
OK. And then do you have any other final parting shots before we get out of here?
Not really. You know, I hope everybody does well because it's nicer to see players succeed than not. But Some interesting storylines to track, and I'm interested to see if those weight gain guys fall on their faces. You know, it'd be surreal if Levante Bellamy or if Eno Benjamin ran like a 4.95 because he added 12 pounds.
Of
just like mass in 3 weeks or whatever. But I hope that doesn't happen because that would be sad for everybody.
Yes, it would. So pulling for everyone at the combine, but also pulling for our respective rankings as well.
The brand is most important, and I would put the fortunes of none of these people ahead of my brand concerns.
Absolutely not. So that's going to wrap things up for this week's pre-combine episode of the RotoWire NFL podcast. We'll be back again next week breaking down what happened at the combine and recalibrating our rankings, which almost certainly will be unchanged because we have everything right as
perfect.
It is. Yeah, exactly.
We'll probably just skip that episode. We'll just have like the quotation marks indicating same as previous field.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll just do that. So look forward to that next week. Enjoy the combine, everybody.
Has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.